Hi everybody, it's Stefan Molyneux from Freedom in Radio. I hope you're doing very well. This is a bit of a postscript to the Bomb in the Brain series, and by the by, I hope that you will spend a few minutes, or even better, a few hours, spreading this information around. The playlist for the Bomb in the Brain series is fdrurl.com/BIB. If you could post this to message boards where people are interested in this kind of information, I think the world in the future would be massively, massively thankful. So I would appreciate it if you do that. Thank you so much. A little bit more evidence came up just today, which I wanted to mention before going on to a few summary thoughts. So this is a study that was done in Japan. A fellow scanned the brains of a bunch of people in their 20s and asked them to fill out a survey about their relationship with their parents during the first 16 years. The researchers used a survey called the Parental Bonding Instrument. And it asked people to rate their parents on statements like, did not want me to grow up, tried to control everything I did, and tried to make me feel dependent on her or him. The team found that those with over-protective parents had less gray matter in particular areas of the prefrontal cortex, which is the area of the brain we've really been focusing on in this series, than those who had healthy relationships with their parents. Neglect from fathers, though not mothers, also correlated with less gray matter. And by the by, you want to do some research on this, or if you're really curious, I can share the research I've done. The development of empathy in children is strongly, strongly correlated with warm, loving, protective, caring, nurturing, intimate relationships with fathers. Fathers are essential in the development of empathy in their children. So if we want to make the world a better place, of course, we need to focus on both aspects of parenting, but often the blame is placed on the mother, or the focus is placed on the mother, but the relationship of the father to the children is absolutely essential in the development of empathy. So this part of the prefrontal cortex develops during childhood, and abnormalities there are common in people with schizophrenia and other mental illnesses. And it's perhaps due to the excessive release of the stress hormone cortisol, which we talked about earlier in the series, due to either to neglect or to too much attention, and reduced production of dopamine as a result of poor parenting leads to stunted gray matter growth. Anthony Harris, director of the Clinical Disorders Units at WestMed Hospital in Sydney, Australia, says the study is important for highlighting to the wider community that parenting styles can have long-term effects on children. And they also theorize that perhaps children born with this deficiency have less of a strong relationship with their parents, so it still remains up in the air. But I would go with the first causation that seems the most obvious, which is strongly backed up by the other information that we've talked about in this series, that poor, deficient, or abusive parenting and neglectful parenting leads to significant brain problems in children. Now, a number of people have written to me to ask me, dude, when did you first come across this information? Well, it was about 15 years ago I read in a book that for the life of me I cannot recall. I do recall that there was a cover painting on the book called When Will It Stop? And please, if you know which book it is, please send me a message, which talked about people who have survived child abuse generally have an even stronger, have stronger problems or more permanent or stubborn personality issues and a stronger post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome than soldiers in a combat zone. And the reason being, of course, that soldiers in a combat zone, the stress that's hitting you as a soldier is hitting an already preformed and adult brain and personality, whereas that which occurs to you as a child is actually forming your brain, as we've seen in this series. So I remember reading quite a bit about that and having an enormous amount of awakening when it came to the effects of early childhood abuse. I don't believe that back then there was the same degree of brain scans, the same technology that allowed people to peer inside the brain to such a level of detail. But the theories that were around a decade and a half ago or longer have been very strongly validated by the science that has been occurring more recently. So I've had this information for a decade and a half or more, and it has strongly, strongly influenced my thinking and reasoning and approaches as a philosopher into making the world a better place. People have often also asked me, I'm considered to be, I guess by some, a Nancy negative, right? A Pollyanna downer. And what they say is, well, enough identifying of problems, what about solutions? Well, of course, there are millions of solutions in my podcast, and people have also asked me, well, if it's not going to be politics, what is it going to be? Well, I have a very short and succinct approach to solving these sorts of problems in the world. It's sort of a five-year plan because, you really want to follow the Soviet model as much as possible. The five-year plan is this. 2 years in therapy. Just do it, do it, do it. Right? If you want excellence, get a great coach. That's just a natural thing. So if you or if you can't or don't, at least before you have children, or if you have children, take some parenting classes to learn non-aggressive, non-violent ways of interacting with your children. My daughter is almost 15 months. We've never had to raise her voice. We've never had to correct her behavior in any aggressive manner. She is very respondent to corrections because they're always very gentle and positive and enthusiastic, and we praise her for complying with sensible directives. So that is perfectly possible and is much, much better for everyone involved. She's never heard a harsh word. She's never heard a raised voice. Of course, she's never been spanked or anything like that. There is absolutely no need for any of that in parenting. And we will some at some point we will apply the same ethical and moral approaches to children that we do to wives, right? So in the past, wives were considered recalcitrant and disobedient, and you had to thrash them in order, and you have to yell at them, and right? And then feminists came along, thank heavens, and this all began to change, right? Women did not have to put up with abusive relationships, just as I suggest adult children don't have to. They don't have to aggress against a woman is unholy, as it of course is to aggress against anybody. We will slowly but surely begin to apply the same moral rules to children, except even more powerfully to children. Of all the moral rules in the world that could ever be applied to anyone, we need to be the most tender, solicitous, empathetic, kind, gentle, and positive and moral with children, because it is out of gentleness and empathy with children that all other virtue in the world will flow. And of course, a wife, to some degree at least, will choose her husband, whereas children don't choose the households that they're born into, which means that the standards of behavior for parents need to be the very highest of any standard of behavior anywhere in the world with any relationship with anyone. There is no greater power disparity in the world than between a parent and a child. And the greater the power disparity, the more gentle and positive the exercise of that power needs to be. And the less choice there is in a relationship, the more virtue needs to be in that relationship in order to make that relationship positive and happy. So go to therapy, ideally. I say 2 years. And why do I say 2 years? Well, I went for a couple of years. I went for 3 hours a week, which is quite a lot. And I did another 8 to 10 hours a week of journaling. And so that may be more than you can do. I happen to be in a place in my life where I could do that. It may be more than you can do. At least take a parenting class and vow to yourself, just as you do with your other relationships, right? You don't go and yell at and slap your friends. You don't yell at and slap your wife, I hope, or your husband. You never yell at, call names, or slap your child. You just don't do it. It's just completely off the table. You need to find other ways to interact with your children, recognizing that, of course, their brains are immature. You need to find other ways to interact with your children. Parenting classes, if you can't afford parenting classes, there's a Parental Effectiveness Training. It's a pretty good book for checking that sort of stuff out. There are tons of books out there. You just need to make that commitment to not be aggressive with your children. You just need to make that commitment. That out of that is the single greatest thing in terms of developing the ethics of the world that can possibly occur. So therapy, ideally, parental classes for nonviolent, non-aggressive ways of interacting with your children, a second best, third best, simply just reading books, but you have to make that commitment. You just have to make that commitment. And I also strongly suggest that if it is even remotely possible, and I would move heaven and earth to make this possible, as I did for myself, be home for the first few years of your child's life. Ideally, if both of you can be home, fantastic. What does that mean? Does that mean you have to move out of your house to an apartment for a couple of years? Do it. I mean, it's what do you care about your house relative to your relationship with your precious and beloved children? What is the use of a house when your children become surly and aggressive teenagers because they weren't around when you weren't around when they were children, so the bond didn't develop? Don't be the parents who go out to work for 10 or 11 hours a day with a commute and see their children for an hour or two a day. I mean, don't be those kinds of parents. That is disastrous and destructive to children. Be home with your children. If you're going to have kids, save up, make whatever modifications, sell your car, take the bus, live in a one-bedroom apartment in a small town for a couple of years. Just be there for the first couple of years of your children's life. That I consider to be absolutely essential. That's a two-part plan. It's 5 years, 2 years in therapy or self-study or parenting groups or whatever, and 3 years or perhaps even a little more, a home with your kids when they are toddlers and infants. It is absolutely, absolutely essential. And that is the way that we change the world. I mean, we have to raise a new generation of people who are not afraid of authority, who do not view the power of authority as controlling and destructive and negative. Because when we raise children, I said this in a recent radio interview, what we want to do is we want to raise children if we want to be free of something like the state, which we do. What we want to do is we want to raise children to look at the state as a bizarre foreign ritual. Right, so if you and I head off to Thailand and we come across some village and they worship a giant stone chicken, right? We would look at that and say, "Well, that's completely weird. Just why would you worship a giant stone chicken?" We would see that as the bizarre local superstition that it is. However, if we were to grow up in that village, right, then we would look at that giant stone chicken the way that your average Christian looks at Jesus, right, as something with depth and power and resonance and mythology and truth and virtue and all of this sort of stuff, right? So we need to raise children in such a way that when they encounter the concept of the state, it looks to them like a giant stone Taiwanese chicken idol worship thing, just like a weird foreign ritual that has no particular emotional impact. That's how we outgrow the government. That's how we outgrow the state. Right, I think that this series has shown reasoning won't do it. What will do it is empathy and love for our children, being home with our children, putting our children first, genuinely, completely, and totally. Maybe you save to go for vacation, right? You save for your old age, you save for all of these things, save for your children. That is the very greatest thing that you can do to help make the world a better place, is to just completely and totally be there in a non-aggressive way for your children. That will have us outgrow the state. You can't outreason the state. You can't outfight the state. Flying planes into buildings is completely pointless and worse than pointless. But we can outgrow the state. But that means positive, non-aggressive, and present ways of raising our children. So, last thing that I will say is that when you do this work, and I hope that you have done it, and I hope you will do it if you are going to do it, but once you've done this work, I think it's really, really important to have respect for the work that you have done, right? As was shown in part four of the series, the vast majority of processing in other people's minds occurs in the unconscious. And the unconscious is incredibly good at sniffing out hypocrisy and a lack of adherence and consistency with one's own values. And so I think it's really important for you to have respect for the work that you have done. And that's the only way that other people will genuinely have respect for the work that you've done. And that means living with integrity rather than just preaching, all of these arguments without the basis of inhabiting them in your own body and in your own life, in your own actual empirical, verifiable choices. I mean, I say kids are everything, and right, so I'm full-time dad. I mean, that's what I do. And I do this show, and I thank you for your donations that keep this show going. But that's been my focus. I say go to therapy. I've been to therapy. I say don't have abusive people in your life if you can at all avoid it. And if they can't be recovered, that's what I mean, I don't sort of prescribe anything that any pill that I haven't already taken. And that I think gives me a kind of credibility when it comes to talking to people in the world about what to do. And it's all worked beautifully. I mean, it's worked even better. And you can listen to my series on parenting if you like. It's worked even better than I could have imagined. So, when you really know something works, you're much more convincing. So, have respect for the work that you've done. Recognize that if you've done a lot of work in self-knowledge, and I started when I was 16, I'm now 43. And so, there were 25 years of work on myself. If I've spent 25 years studying anything, Mandarin, jazz, piano, anything, I'm going to be an expert. And if other people have not spent that amount of time, they're simply not going to be experts. Right? So I think it's really important to respect that you've done that amount of work on yourself, or whatever amount of work you have done. Recognize that if you walk into a room with other people who haven't done that work, then treating them as equals is completely irrational. I mean, if I've spent 20 years studying Mandarin, I don't walk into a room where nobody speaks Mandarin and start talking Mandarin to them, because it's just going to be annoying to everyone involved. Right. If I've trained for 10 years to run marathons, I don't just grab fat smokers from a couch and drag them along with me and think that it's going to work out. Right. Hopefully I can inspire them to quit smoking and exercise, but I have to respect the work that I've done, that I've become an expert, that I've trained in something very profound and very fundamental, and that other people, most other people, just haven't. And so to treat them as equals is unjust to the work that you've actually done on yourself. I'd really, really strongly recommend that. If you're a university professor of mathematics, you don't walk into a kindergarten and start teaching people quantum physics equations. You don't start teaching them the mathematics behind Schrodinger's cat and the theory of relativity. Of course not. It would be ridiculous. It would be completely non-empirical. And the empirical fact is very few people pursue self-knowledge to any particular degree. Very few people. It is an elite pursuit that is reserved for very, very few people at the moment. It will change in time, in the future. But right now, it's, you know, how many people do you run into who speak fluent Klingon? Well, I think that's more people than you will run into who speak fluent self, right? Self-knowledge. So have respect for the knowledge and the work that you've done. You know, don't, if you've studied jazz piano for 25 years and you're a renowned world expert in jazz piano, don't just break out your keyboard at dinner table and expect people with a couple of jazz albums to be able to do anything other than just make an unpleasant noise by playing the piano with their forehead at the guitar with their knees. Recognize the skills that you have, which will give you some patience, I think, as a teacher and an instructor and a communicator of truth and virtue of self and self-knowledge. So really, really, if you've done the work, have that respect, and that will help other people to respect what you've done and hopefully motivate them to pursue self-knowledge in the same way. Thank you so much, so, so much, everyone, for watching, as always. Please drop by if you'd like the Sunday show. It is 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just drop into the freedomainradio.com chat room to listen in or to join in. I look forward to chatting with you. And remember, if you're going to be around, or you'd like to be around, in San Francisco, July 1st to 4th, 2010, for the Libertopia Festival, I hope that you will come. Libertopia.org is the place to find out. It is a truly stellar group of freedom thinkers. And I have a keynote speech that I think will blow your socks wide across the room. And so I look forward to seeing you there. All the best.